Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
106.5 The Ticket.
Open three, puts it in. It's quickly down the other end is Draymond Green. Green, back to Curry. Bang! Curry again. Back out Curry. Curry for three. It's good. Thompson catch and shoot again. Klay Thompson from downtown. Final seconds here at Oracle Arena. It's official number 73. The greatest regular season in NBA history now belongs to the 2016 Golden State Warriors.
We have our certain identity of how we play and obviously shooting at a high level, moving the ball. Everybody has a role, and we have fun doing it. So I don't know specifically. One similarity is that we love winning, and we love to compete, and we love to push ourselves. And that's what's pushed us to this opportunity we had tonight. You know, we need 16 wins. It's nice to be able to focus on that goal specifically now.
It's a great way to finish off what was an amazing regular season. I just told our guys I never in a million years would have guessed that record would ever be broken. I thought it was like DiMaggio's hit streak, really. I was wrong, but I will say the same thing now that I said 20 years ago. I don't think this one will ever be broken.
We are here to celebrate greatness for 20 years. Excellence for 20 years.
Bryant gets to the basket and has 47 points.
See if he gets 50 here.
Bryant going to the basket. Kobe
yes.
Bryant!
There it is!
A 50-point game in his farewell. Final minute 30. Bryant for 14. Has 53! Unbelievable stuff tonight.
Bryant for 3.
Oh!
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 The Lakers down 1. Will Kobe give them one last gamer? Bryant on the move with the jumper.
My! 58 points! And the Lakers lead!
Here's Bryant, two free throws for 60. 60. Close out Kobe Bryant's career with a win and one of the great farewell performances in any sport.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, goodness! The fun from last night that we saw. Wow! Welcome into this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're having some technical difficulties trying to get Bob online and all that good stuff. So it is I, Jim Kuchlin, hanging out with you for a little while. And we got a jam-packed, fun show based on a lot of the things you just heard. The Warriors get their 73. Kobe with one of the greatest farewell performances of all time. And I spent the entire afternoon going through Hall of Fame players, game logs, and stories that I remember, whether I saw or heard about them, to figure out, with what we saw last night, was that the greatest farewell performance by any athlete in any sport? 60 points for Kobe. Now, sure, he took 50 shots, and you knew he was going to take basically every shot for the Lakers, but to still put up 60... and to bring his horrible Lakers team around him back from down 10 to end up winning that game, it's one of, if not the greatest, farewell performance of all time. And I went through a whole bunch of other ones. I spent all afternoon on this, trying to figure out if there's any performances in a great player's last game that's anywhere close to the equivalent of what we saw late last night with Kobe out in L.A. And I got a couple that might qualify, but we'll have to see exactly how it ends up filtering out after that. Because there's some close. Just hear some of this craziness again.
Here's
Bryant gets to the basket and has 47 points. See if he gets 50 here. Bryant going to the basket.
Something's up with Bob Bryant, no matter how many times we cannot be saying it's all muddled.
In his farewell. Final minute 30. Bryant from 14 has 53. Unbelievable stuff tonight. Bryant for three. The Lakers down one. Will Kobe give them one last gamer? Bryant on the move with the jumper.
He's got it!
58 points! And the Lakers lead! Here's Bryant, two free throws for 60. 60. Close out Kobe Bryant's career with a win and one of the great farewell performances in any sport.
That's just crazy stuff, though. I mean, seriously. It just kept going and going, and eventually he gets 60 points. It's utterly astounding how he could do that at that age. And sure, again, they were going to give him the ball, but definitely one of the greatest farewell performances. You also heard some things in there from the Warriors. They did, in fact, get number 73. They crushed the Grizzlies, didn't even give him a chance, because unlike, say, the Cavs-Pistons glorified exhibition that you may or may not have seen, and no one will hold it against you if you didn't see it from last night. Warriors played everybody. You know, they've been trying to chase this record. They crush the Grizzlies, get the record. Steph Curry becomes the first ever guy to ever drain 400 or more threes in a season. His final tally was 402, by the way. And now they go set into the playoffs with the record and try to get a second consecutive championship. So we're going to talk about all this fun stuff and get a playoff preview a little bit later on, because we do have a Pistons-Cavs series starting this weekend that we're going to have a lot of fun here on this show with for about a week, week and a half, depending how long it goes. Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, Pistons writer, he's going to join us at 4:05. We were trying for this a little bit earlier in the week when the news actually broke, but was a little preoccupied that day. But nonetheless, we do have a spring game coming up on Saturday for the Ohio State Buckeyes. It's about the only deviation we're going to take from a lot of this record-type talk today here on the Extravaganza. Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, will join us at 3:35, talk to him about the spring game, and relive some stories from Will Smith, who, of course, was shot and killed over the weekend in the road rage or trying to get back in a cop's that whole messed up story. So we weren't able to get him for Monday. He was a little preoccupied, but we're going to hear his thoughts on that and what the Buckeyes might have going in the spring game. The only thing I can tell you on that front, a lot less entertaining than last year, where we were debating that this could be the quarterback tryout in the one spring game out there to definitely watch. That's not really the case this year, but we'll still get the lowdown on exactly what Urban Meyer and the rest of the Buckeyes are looking at. By the way, we'll have the spring game for you coming up on Saturday about 1:30. So Paul Keels, 3:35, Aaron McMahon, 4:05. Your phone calls for the rest at 866-240-1065. You got thoughts on the playoff series? We'll take those calls. Any thoughts on the Warriors, the record, and what it means? We'll take those as well. By the way, it was a bad day for records falling, specifically of the Bulls and Michael Jordan variety. Obviously, we know the big one. The Warriors beat that 95-96 Bulls team with the 73 wins. But then, you know, when Kobe goes off for 60, come to find out that in terms of players, I don't know where sometimes they get these stats, but it is kind of interesting. Kobe is now has the highest scoring game of any NBA player in the history of the game, over 37. That was held by Michael Jordan, who had 51 in one of those useless years that he came back again for the Washington Wizards, which, by the way, is a partial asterisk in the whole was that the greatest farewell performance, because since Jordan came back and played two seasons in Washington, everybody wants to forget actually happened. It means the infamous Game 6 in 98 finals is technically not his last game. But that's the other topic I wanted to go over. And your thoughts on all this stuff, happy to take it today at 866-240-1065. I'm just astounded by what I saw late last night. I still am. I know he had 50 shots, made 22 of them, bunch of free throws, a couple threes, 42 minutes. But to go 60 points in your farewell performance, your last time out on the professional field or court, Or ice, I suppose, too. And you do something like that. So I was thinking then, and I did some research all afternoon to try to find in any sport, was there any farewell performance that was comparable to what we saw in this one? Was there any one of them? Any one of them? And here's kind of what I figured out. First, to compare what Kobe did last night to some of the other great legendary Hall of Fame basketball players and what they did in their final NBA game. Wilt Chamberlain, game 5 of the 73 finals, lost that game to the Knicks. He had 23. So a decent performance, but it was a loss. Game 4 of the 89 finals, when the Pistons, the bad boy Pistons, completed a sweep of the Lakers. Kareem, in his final game in 29 minutes, 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 of 8 from the field. Bill Russell, game 7 of the 69 finals, as player coach, he only scored 6 points on the court. But the Celtics won that title, of course. Here's one I remember personally from a kid because I watched this game. Game 7 of the 1992 Eastern Conference Semis at the old Richfield Coliseum. That was Larry Bird's last game. 6-9 from the floor, 12 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He missed most of the end of March and April in the first round of the playoffs before coming back midway through that series. Helped give the Celtics a little bit of a lift, but he was just too old and broken down by that point, mostly the broken down part. He still had 12 points and 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 6-9 from the field. Wasn't enough. Reggie Miller, Game 6, East Semis 05. He had 27 points, 11 of 16, 4 of 8 from beyond the arc. But the Pacers lost, and it was only the semis. Still a very good performance. One of the better ones on this list. Then you get to the two interesting ones that have asterisks next to them. Because what originally was their final game became not their final game. I speak, of course, of Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, who, if they didn't come back after the first original final game, their two performances would have been in the discussion with what Kobe did last night. First, you have Magic Johnson. His actual technical last game was game 4 of the 96 West first round. He had 8 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. But the last game he played before the infamous HIV announcement that forced him to retire, they lost this game and lost the NBA Finals in 91 to Jordan's Bulls, four games won. But in that Game 5 defeat, Magic went for 16 points, 11 rebounds, 20 assists in 48 minutes in the loss. So that performance would have been astounding. Then there's, speaking of Jordan, Michael Jordan. His technical final game in the NBA, i.e. the one we all want to forget, was in the end of 2003 when he's 42 years old playing for the Wizards. I know. I still try to forget that that ever actually happened, but it did. And MJ in 20 minutes was 6 of 15, 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. If he decided to have not done that, though, then his original final game would have been truly comparable and would have been the main point of, was that better or was Kobe last night better? Of course, I'm referring to Game 6 of the 98 NBA Finals. When he made that last-second shot, yeah, there was like 2 seconds left on the clock, but whatever. He made the last-second shot that gave the Bulls the win in the championship. Had 4 steals, 15 of 35 for the floor, 45 points in the clincher, including the famed game-winning shot. The crossover in Utah, that whole thing. That would have been in the discussion with Kobe. But there's an asterisk there because Jordan inexplicably decided to come back a third time, and we all try to forget that that ever happened. Shifting to a few other sports, looking up a couple of the various greats out there. Jim Brown, not a great final game, the 1965 NFL title game. He had 12 carries for 50 yards. Browns lost to the Packers. Barry Sanders, 19 carries, 41 yards on the road in Atlanta in his final game in 1998. Dan Marino, his final game was a 1999 AFC Divisional, the one that the Dolphins lost 62-7. Marino went 11 of 25, 95 yards, touchdown, 2 picks, and his team lost 62-7. Ouch. We have Peyton Manning just from a few months ago. Yes, he did get the Super Bowl win in his last time out, but he wasn't the reason, as we know why. 11 of 25, or 13 of 23, 141 yards and an interception, no touchdowns. I had to do this, guys. Sorry, my Browns bias did kick in here. Because Otto Graham's final game was winning the 1955 NFL title. That was in, you know, before the Super Bowl. Otto Graham that day went 14 of 25, 209 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks. He also rushed for 2 touchdowns and won the championship. That's a performance that's up there, especially because it won a championship. And everybody knew it was his last day out there. I had an old Browns video, and they were talking about how even the L.A. Ram people, yes, because it was the L.A. Rams then, just as it is now again, they were cheering when Otto Graham left the field in the fourth quarter. In a title game in their building, the opponent's beating you, and you're cheering their quarterback, because they understood. But that was so long ago, it's one of those apples and oranges it almost feels like. How about one of the more modern? John Elway's final game. He was Super Bowl MVP of that Super Bowl 33 in 98 when the Broncos won their second title against the Falcons. He won the MVP award that night. 18 of 29, 336, touchdown, a pick, and a rushing touchdown. And that is one game that is up there. That's definitely in the discussion with Kobe. A couple other interesting names, because really, when I look through it, there's just not a lot. Example, Wayne Gretzky only had one assist in 1999 in his final time on the ice. His last goal came 8 games earlier. Derek Jeter, 2 years ago, 1 for 2 with an RBI in his last at bat, an RBI single in his last at bat, then they took him out of the game. Tony Gwynn was an 0-for in his last game, as was Cal Ripken. Ted Williams, back in 1960, famed for hitting a home run in Fenway in his final major league at bat. That kind of thing is up there, but not quite what we saw last night. And a non of the four sports one, I found someone mentioned this one, so I thought it was worthy, because to me this is when tennis was a little bit better, because, you know, you had Americans dominating. When Pete Sampras beat Andre Agassi in his final time on a tennis court in the 92 U.S. Open Championship game match, the final. So really, I look at that. I look at this whole list, and the only games or players that I could think in their final performance that were anywhere near as comparable to what we saw with Kobe Bryant last night was John Elway in Super Bowl 33, and had he not come back to the Wizards, that final Michael Jordan game in the 98 NBA Finals when he scored 45 and hit the game winner with 2 seconds to go. That's really it. My Browns bias wants to throw Otto Graham in there, but I acknowledge that that was 1955, so we should probably exclude it. So really, you're left with the real question, and this is what I want from you guys today, 866-240-1065. Which performance was better, Kobe last night, John Elway in Super Bowl 33, or if we want to pretend the Wizards years didn't exist, Michael Jordan's final game in the 98 Finals? 866-240-1065. I found it a fascinating subject just because, you know, we were talking here on the Extravaganza as well the other day. And which game would you rather see from last night? If you had to be in attendance but can only be in one, obviously, can't be in two places literally at the same time, as we all know, which would you rather be? Would you rather be in Oracle seeing Golden State win a 73rd, or would you rather be in L.A. to watch Kobe? And I personally picked the Warriors game. I didn't say it like this, but this was probably part of my reasoning. You don't expect the guy to go off for 60. So I figured the better history would have been an Oracle. Not the case, though, last night. 866-240-1065. Higher on the Extravaganza on the Ticket is this.
This is Steve.
What's going on, Steve? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I love this question you asked, because I don't even think this is close. As much as Kobe Bryant's 60 points was very impressive, he also took 50 shots to get it,
yep,
and the game didn't matter whatsoever. And I can remember Jordan's 45-point game and the NBA Finals. Everybody knew it was his last game,
yep,
at least at that point, because we all knew Phil Jackson was retiring.
Right. The Bulls would have, you know, like 4 60-loss seasons in a row after that game, too.
Yeah, and the thing about it was, as much as it was fun watching Kobe score, it was forced. I mean, he was taking shots that...
Oh, there was no question throughout that entire game that almost every other Laker almost felt afraid to take a shot, like it wasn't their proper place to do it. I did get exactly. that vibe. And you kind of knew he was going to take a bunch of shots. And 22 of 50 is not a great percentage, but it's still 60 points. It's still pretty remarkable performance. Just when I'm looking down this list, because quite frankly, whether the game was important or not, I'm finding things like, again, Tony Gwynn, 0 for 1. Cal Ripken was 0 for 3 in his final game. Barry Sanders, the Lion, he only went 19 carries, 41 yards. There's not actually a lot of great performances. And in Barry Sanders' case, for example, he had messaged that he was going to retire, I think, a couple weeks before that. So we kind of knew at that point. So a lot of these guys, there's just not a ton of great performances on there, whether it's regular season or playoff. And that's why I said, to me, it comes down to two others other than Kobe last night. It's that John Elway Super Bowl 33. And if you want to pretend that the Wizard stuff didn't happen, that final game of Michael Jordan in 98. Those are the only two that come close. And I would right now rank them ahead of Kobe just because of the importance of those two particular games. They were both championship clinchers. But to me, then after that, Kobe's performance, it would be number three. Just because, even though it's completely meaningless, Stephen, you're right, it was completely meaningless. Turns out for both sides, too, because Houston already won earlier today, so Utah had no longer had anything to play for either. I thought going in they would still have a chance for a playoff spot. That didn't happen. But just to go off like that, where a lot of other guys in their final game of their careers were, quite frankly, inconsequential, Kobe was still far from it, despite the 50 shots and meaningless game.
Yeah, as I thought about this question, I mean, what did Wayne Gretzky's last game
Wayne
like.
Gretzky, he had in 1999, his final time on the ice, he had 1 point and one assist. 8 games earlier than that was when he scored his last NHL goal. So a ho-hum, uneventful for the most part night for the great one.
Yeah, see, and I swear there's got to be a pitcher out there or somebody who pitched a complete game that looked great.
Well, here's one that's sort of along those lines, Steve, that I did find. In 2008, Mike Mussina, at this point with the Yankees, he had 6 shutout innings, got the win, and that was his 20th win of the season, which happened to be as good of a pitcher as he was for his career, only his first 20-win season ever. So, in other words, his last time on the mound, he gets a win, which was his 20th win, the first time he ever crossed the 20-win threshold in his career. That's the only pitcher, at least in the modern era, that I found that it's even close.
You know, that's interesting. The other thing to think about, and I know it's kind of different because it's college, you know, all the great college performances we see from seniors when they know they're going to win the last year.
I did exclude that one because I wanted to at least stick with the pros. Because what I did research, it took me all afternoon, is one full sheet of paper. I would have needed another 2 full sheets of paper if I went through all the great seniors, like a Christian Laettner, for example, in his final game or something like that. Because you're right, it's a little different when you measure from college. So I decided not to for the purposes of this.
I guess that makes sense. I, to be honest, I'm surprised we haven't seen some of these. But I guess when you're dealing with players, that are retiring, they're in their late 30s, you wouldn't expect all these performances. I'd also say I'd probably even rate John Elway's ahead of Kobe just because of the significance of the game.
Looking at it this way, if it's John Elway, Kobe, and then a few others, or it's John Elway, Michael Jordan, if you want to pretend that the Wizards years didn't exist, then Kobe. That's my ranking. I still would put Elway in that Super Bowl just above what Kobe did last night because it was a Super Bowl, and he performed so well he earned the Super Bowl MVP in his last time out on the football field. That is still, to me, better than what we saw from Kobe last night, mostly because of a game importance kind of thing.
Well, I would probably go Jordan, then Elway, then Kobe, but I got to go, but it's been great. I love listening to you.
We appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Steve. 866-240-1065. Your thoughts on this? It's a fascinating conversation. And like I said, researching a bunch of this, there really aren't a lot of guys who did magical things. It's very rare when a guy, whether he knows he's retiring or the world knows he's retiring or not, what turns out to be their final game, there's a lot more duds in here than shining examples. Here's another one. I had to look this up because of the old legend from that bad movie with John Goodman 20 years ago. Babe Ruth's final game in the majors, he did go 0 for 1. 6 games earlier, this is what legend would tell you is his last game, as well as that bad John Goodman movie from 20 years ago, but it turned out not to be his last game. He appeared in 6 more, about 8, 9 at-bats, 1 for 8 after that. His last big game, though, was six games earlier, 4-for-4, 3 homers, 6 RBIs, the famed 3-homer game at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh. But he went 0-for-1 his actual last time out on a baseball field. Mentioned Tony Gwynn, the late great Tony Gwynn, 0-for-1 in his final appearance. Cal Ripken was 0-for-3 and holding back tears every time he went to the plate in his final game in 2001. Cleveland Browns, Jim Brown, didn't know he was retiring at that point. That feud with Modell would take place the offseason. 1965 title game in Lambeau, lost to Bart Starr, Vince Lombardi, and the Packers, and Jim Brown went 12 carries, 50 yards, did not see the end zone. Mentioned a couple other guys, out there, like Peyton Manning. Did go out on top winning a Super Bowl like John Elway did, but it wasn't because of Peyton Manning. He was kind of below average, quite frankly. Kind of bad, actually, that game. 13-23, only 141 yards and the one interception. So there really aren't a lot of truly magical farewell performances, whether it's in a regular season, meaningless game like we had last night, or whether it's a championship, a Super Bowl, a finals, a World Series appearance on the other side of things. They're just still few and far between, no matter how you slice it. So where would you rank Kobe's from last night? My personal ranking right now, Elway in the Super Bowl is 1, Kobe is 2. Kobe moves down to 3, and Michael Jordan in 98 moves up to 2, if we all pretend that those two Wizards years didn't exist, which I think we all would like to be the case. We'll take more phone calls on this. We're going to broach this subject with Aaron McMahon of MLive.com. That's for the Pistons writer, because we're going to talk to him about that, the Warriors record, and get a little preview of the Cavs-Pistons series. Game 1 slated for the Q on Sunday afternoon. A game, by the way, the courtesy of our friends over here at ESPN Radio. We'll have that game for you with a 2 o'clock pregame time Sunday afternoon right here on the ticket. We are going to shift gears, though, for a little bit. I had planned to have him on at some point this week anyway. And then the Will Smith news over the weekend came out. Tried for Monday. He was a little busy. But today we're going to hook up with Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, get a spring game preview for Ohio State, and walk down memory lane for some of the good memories of the now late Will Smith, who, of course, was shot and killed over the weekend in New Orleans. So we'll talk with Paul Keels about all that and more coming up next. Aaron McMahon at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, and then your calls on all these subjects and more. It's a Thursday edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And now that all of our technical glitches appear to be worked
Yay!
Out, it looks like we got our regular show back. How about that? Nicely done by Mr. Cushlin. I didn't know. So let's see. You do a producing gig. You sometimes host the show. You are an umpire, and now you're actually moonlighting as a radio engineer.
Yeah, something like that.
Cushlin,
but you don't want me in
problem.
The engineering realm too much. I'm liable to break something if in there too long.
You know. It reminds me of that old Simpsons episode where Homer stopped the nuclear or the power plant from suffering a meltdown by doing an eeny, meeny, miny, moe and pushing a button. That's you right now. You eeny, meeny, miny, moe your way to fixing our technical glitch.
Well, we got lucky, so let's not jinx it.
All right. Well, thanks for fixing everything up, Cush. And I don't know what I missed, but I do know what's in front of us, and that is the great Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes football and basketball, joining us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Paul, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well, too. I understand you had a little change of location. Everything is business as usual now?
This past weekend into Monday was the second of a two-part move that started in August. So it was, and that was my first move in 17 years. So you can imagine the ordeal that was.
But, I can indeed.
And end result exciting, still living among some boxes and some disorganization, but got into the new place and kind of still settling in. But thank you for the concern.
Well, thank you for making some time for us, Paul. It's always a pleasure when we get to talk Ohio State football or basketball with you. And we want to focus on spring football now, and I want to get maybe a thought or two from you on the Will Smith tragedy down in New Orleans, too. But let's start on the positive side. JT Barrett, from all indications and all of the stories I read, not being in Columbus and watching any of spring practice, is being asked to do a few different things this season for Urban Meyer and for the Buckeye offense. But by all indications, looks terrific.
That's what we understand. Again, as you know, most practices are closed, so they have not been able to eyeball any of it. And the stuff that has been open has been what I've been doing at Ohio State baseball. But it sounds as though what they've been is really pass heavy right now, just trying to, you know, get the off, especially the new offensive linemen adjusted to what it is they're going to need to do with pass protection. Some serious questions at wide receiver because of the departures, because the two of the guys they're really going to count on are rehabbing injuries in Corey Smith and Noah Brown. So there's a lot of guys that are trying to get up to speed there. But, you know, I think it's been a nice change that there's not a quarterback question this year. The only question with quarterback is trying to get one of the two guys in a hurry ready to be the backup, whether it's Joe Burrow or Stephen Kiger. But, you know, JT Barrett is a known commodity. We saw him kind of regain a little of his groove toward the end of last season after the little speed bump he had where he missed one game in the middle of the year. But, you know, they've really just kind of, you know, tried to be careful from a contact standpoint from what we understand. But he's a guy that really brings all of the things we saw 2 years ago in a record-setting redshirt freshman year. But what they've been doing with him is more trying to get other people up to speed than it is what it is that he brings.
No question about it. Because of JT's injury history, you'd really got to talk a little more about that backup quarterback situation. Any sense of, from either talking to anybody or just your gut feeling on whether it would be Burrow or whether it would be Collier as maybe the number two?
Right now, it looks like, from what it sounds like, it's going to be Joe Burrow. You know, the young man that redshirted last year from Athens, Ohio. You know, a guy that had an outstanding senior season in high school. Had a chance to watch him in the state championship game. But yeah, I know they're
also Toledo Central Catholic, so we know it very well up here. The Central Catholic boys had their hands full with him.
Yeah, that crazy game. But you know, I think that you know, and Stephen Kiger got on the field for just one series last year in the Hawaii game. But it's still a question because you're talking about guys that virtually have not seen any real meaningful game activity. So you expect we're going to see just a little bit of JT on Saturday and then really turn the other guys loose to see what it is that they can do. And if we've seen anything over the last 2 years, we know that Ohio State's got to have more than one quarterback. You know, the infamous run 2 years ago with Cardale Jones, with what he was able to do in the national championship. And then the back and forth of last year, and then Cardale being given the Minnesota game when JT was suspended. So, but it sounds right now, Bob, that Joe Burrow is the guy that's the front runner for number two. But I think that's not a very firm hold on it right now.
Paul, you talked about a couple of positions, the quarterback position. You mentioned certainly new guys on the offensive line and the receivers. But the best running back in college football last year, arguably, Ezekiel Elliott is on his way to the NFL now as well. Who's poised to step into that role, or who are some of the names that we need to be watching in the spring game?
Right now, the two that are being talked about the most are Mike Weber, the redshirt freshman out of Detroit, mm-hmm. and Bryante Dunn, who seemingly has been around for a long time. And, you know, Bryante most of the time has gotten attention for not great reasons. But he apparently has looked very good in the spring. This is a young man a few years ago that, you know, he had an off-the-field problem. He's at times shown a little bit of a fumbling problem, but he's really gotten the coach's attention. And you know, I think the other part of that, we still won't get a better grasp on until we get into the summer to see how much Curtis Samuel might be able to give them. You know, he comes back with a great deal of experience. Might we even see Dontre Wilson get back there and run the ball a little bit? But it's right now Michael Weber and Bryante Dunn who are being talked about the most at running back.
On a away from the roster side of things here, just talking college football, I'm interested in your thoughts on the NCAA's new ban on satellite camps. You know, a lot of people feel like this is really going to hurt the big time schools and the big time Ohio State, Michigan, SEC type powers. What is your thought on that? There's obviously a lot of people very upset about that. Why do you suppose the NCAA made that move?
You know, I'm not sure, Bob, and I think at least from the little bit I've been able to, and you know, I haven't been able to bone up on it as much as maybe you have or others. But you know, the concern that you're hearing people like Urban Meyer and others talk about is the effect it'll have on the MAC schools and some of the other smaller schools in state whose coaches go to the Ohio State camps, or go to some of these, you know, possible satellite locations to be able to see players that won't be recruited by Big Ten schools. You know, some of it certainly has been a knee-jerk reaction to what Jim Harbaugh did with Michigan and taking his team down to Florida. And there's reason to look at some of it. The thing that shocked me, and maybe it did you, Bob, was how quickly they dealt with this. I mean, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, remember how long it took them to deal with deciding whether or not Ohio State should get a postseason ban after everything that happened with Coach Tressel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that went through Luke Fickell's entire season as head coach in 2011. So that's what surprised me. But you just, you wonder, does this really have the benefit of all potential student athletes, not just those that are going to play at the BCS conference teams, but those that are going to be able to play in the Mid-American Conference, in the Sun Belt, in the Ohio Valley, where maybe there isn't the chance to get the exposure that others would get that are going to go to Big Ten schools and the like. That's the thing that concerns you.
Yeah, Urban even said something about this, too. He was originally opposed to satellite camps, and he changed his mind when he was talking about this on Monday. And he referenced his time, as you mentioned, MAC schools. He said when he was at Bowling Green, he said, quote, "I'd come to Ohio State's camp because you get to see these great players. So I didn't realize that was part of the conversation. I really wish the NCAA would revisit part of this." So he's disappointed that the MAC schools can't go, you know, to some of these camps and see some of these great players that you were talking about.
And I got to think they're going to look at it and maybe define, you know, here's the murky part of it. What really is a satellite camp? Is it what Michigan and Jim Harbaugh did, or is it, you know, a couple, three Big Ten schools getting together and deciding to do something in Indianapolis, in Detroit, you know, in Toledo, in Cincinnati, you know, kind of centralizing something? Because I know listening to an interview with Hugh Freeze from Ole Miss, he talked about, you know, eventually there might be some discussion amongst some of the SEC schools to do something combined within their region that provides an opportunity. But it's just, it gets confusing sometimes trying to keep up with what they're governing and what they're not governing. Maybe that's just a lack of how sharp I am at being able to follow it. It does get to be a little confusing.
I agree with you. It has nothing to do with you. It really is confusing for a lot of people. There's no question about it. We're talking with Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes. Of course, you're here right here on ESPN 106.5, the ticket to Ohio State football and basketball. The spring game is coming this weekend, and Jim Cushlin is here as well. Cush, go ahead.
You know, and by the way, side note, the satellite camp story just cracks me up, because part of me still sees it as a starting place for the Big Ten getting under the SEC skin, and I love every second of that. But back on this game, the one thing that strikes me, Paul, is that last year we had so much fun, you know, obviously going into this with all the quarterback discussion. We don't really have that this year, but to a certain degree, spring games are still some times when coaches can maybe figure out some game plans of what they see and some of the guys that they might like and think, okay, he did some nice things. Maybe we'll think differently of him going into the fall. Are there any specific things on Saturday we should be looking for that might affect how practices and depth charts and things end up in the fall?
You know, Jim, I think what we talked about with the backup quarterback, that's going to be one. You know, and seeing these guys play in front of what the estimates are, it's going to be a huge crowd. Mike Weber getting a chance to run the football before a big crowd. You know, I think the two linebacker spots that are kind of up there for grabs surrounding Raekwon McMillan, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how some of the guys were able to play out with all of that. What will this do in regard to some depth at various positions? You know, I think it will be somewhat interesting to watch the defensive line. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, if you think back to the Fiesta Bowl game against Notre Dame, when you were minus Tommy Shutt, you were minus Adolphus Washington, and Joey Bosa was kicked out of the game early, you got to look at that young defensive line that was kind of a sign of the future. Now, Tyquan Lewis has not been doing anything because of injury rehab, but, you know, Tracy Sprinkle on the defensive line has been a name that's been talked about a lot as far as looking good. I think we've known Sam Hubbard can be a guy that can contribute there, Michael Hill. You know, what just some of those names, how those guys are going to come along. And then there's always, you know, down here we've kind of always talked about it amongst our network folks. You know, every year there's always a star of the spring game, and then do you ever hear from him again? You know, one guy that really made a name for himself was Anthony Gonzalez a bunch of years ago. He had a couple of big spring games, and then all of a sudden, you know, he became the receiver he was. Bam Childress was a guy that did that, but we never really quite saw Bam turn that into significant play during regular season games. Michael Thomas, I believe it was after his true freshman year, or maybe he was in an early enrollee, I can't remember, but he had like 10, 11, 12, 13 catches in a spring football game, and we saw what kind of receiver he became. So, you know, the fun part always is, you know, who emerges that you don't know about. And then there's this, you know, the pursuit of trying to get 100,000 fans. It sounds like the weather's going to be good. You know, Ohio State made a great decision last year to bring the ticket prices back down to $5. I think that's made it very, very fan-friendly, and We all know how crazy Buckeye fans are. If the weather's nice, the tickets are amenable, you're going to see a good turnout more than likely.
No question about it. I want to talk about somebody who's not really a fan of college football anymore, and I'm sure you know where I'm going after Cardale Jones let fly with it. It's kind of funny. As he ends his Ohio State career, he ends it with some controversy on Twitter, the kind of the same way he started it, way back as a freshman when he talked about not coming here to play school. We're here to play football. But Cardale Jones, as you know, probably, then again, maybe you were packing boxes. So, Paul, I'm going to catch off guard here. But Cardale issued a few tweets or sent out a few tweets, I should say, and then made a few comments in reaction to that, in which he basically said, I'm glad to be done with the hypocritical, exploitative NCAA. They use the players. The NCAA and the universities get to make all kinds of money off our jersey sales with our number and our likenesses, et cetera, and we're not allowed to make a dime. He was clear to say that this isn't just about paying the players. It's just about being treated with respect and not being exploited in such ways. So he's really glad to be done with the college football NCAA game for that reason. Your thoughts on it?
Well, and I heard one of the interviews that Cardale did after that came out, one of the national interviews. And the first thing I'll say, it was impressive. It seemed as though this was very well thought out, as opposed to the tweet that got him in trouble when he was a redshirt freshman. This was something that he put a lot of thought into. And in listening to the interview with him, and they asked, why would you do this? And it was really his way of trying to do something for those coming behind him that are still going to be playing college football. And, you know, certainly there's reason to have a question about, you know, the business of college football, or the business of college sports for that matter. And, you know, how there's certainly, you understand why some of these student athletes feel like they're being exploited, and while so many others are making money, they're not able to. Now, there certainly are great opportunities that are presented to them because of the free education and the opportunity to play college sports that they get. So, you know, this one, it didn't rub me as wrong as maybe it did some others, because you could tell it was something that was well thought out. Now, the other side of that is, it's something that possibly gets an NFL team that might be thinking about drafting him. Does that raise some concern? You could understand maybe why that might raise a little concern, but you also hope then what they'll do, if it's somebody that's seriously considering drafting him, that they go beyond that, you know, talking to him, finding out something about him, not only as a player, as an individual. But, you know, the thing I took from it, Bob, is that this was something that he put time and effort and preparation in doing.
Yeah, and you know what? I would hope that nobody holds that against him at the NFL level when they're looking at character or personality or whatever, you know, the fact that he's outspoken, because this truly isn't self-centered or self-motivated or whatever you want to call it, because, as you say, he can't benefit by any change that might be made at his suggestion. If he was somehow to get the ear of people and say, hey, this is how we feel, he's not going to benefit because he's done. The only people who could benefit from this are, you know, student-athletes who are in the game right now or to come down the line. So from that standpoint, and he said, I felt this way for a long time, as long as I've been in college, but the current players, while you're playing, aren't allowed to talk about this or you get in trouble. So if you look at it from that standpoint, I would hope that a GM or scouts or people evaluating potential players will look at that and say, you know, that's a pretty good guy here. He held his tongue when he was in school, and now that he's out, he's looking out for other people. He has nothing to gain from saying what he's saying right now.
Well, and this is a young man that certainly has grown up an awful lot. I know that Urban Meyer talked quite a bit when he and his coaching staff came into Ohio State. They really, because if you remember, Cardale Jones was already here. They did not know and really didn't feel for a while that he belonged to be on the Ohio State football team, that he hadn't done the work to deserve it. Certainly hadn't done the work at that point to earn the opportunity to play, but a young man that kind of was put on notice that he was on thin ice, and, you know, he turned himself around, not only as a football player, but as a young man by a lot of accounts. And, you know, certainly I don't think anybody will forget that three-game run against Wisconsin, against Alabama, and against Oregon, and helping Ohio State win a national championship. And a guy that, in hindsight, his pro stock might have been better suited had he left after that championship year. But he also was a guy that understood and realized that there probably was a little more developing that he needed to do. Did he develop that much more? Maybe not, but I would agree with you, Bob. Certainly this is a guy that has grown up an awful lot, and that showed a lack of selflessness. It wasn't about him. It was about the state of college athletics.
No question. I would completely agree with that. I know this is you're not an NFL scout, but ballpark, third round, fourth round, second round? Where do you think he's going?
I would say, you know, maybe best case late second round, third round. I think it just depends on the team and the situation, and also just from the individual meetings. But you certainly, if you think back to that three-game run on the route to a national championship, there's a great example against high-quality competition of what he could bring to a football team.
Vegas has Gray by three. Who do you like, Scarlett or Gray?
I'm going for a regulation tie. How's that?
You know, there are degenerate gamblers. I mean, I made that up, of course. There were people who would actually say, "Put 20 on it for me."
Hey, there was one year under Jim Tressel, we were worried about the game going to overtime. When, if you'll remember, the couple of years when the spring game was played at Crew Stadium, and I think it was Jim Tressel's first year as head coach, they had a tight fourth quarter. Normally, the last two quarters are running clock. He went back to a stop-and-start clock, and we were really worried, Bob, they were going to play overtime.
Wow. I do not recall that, actually. But what a great story that is. And, you know, I'm sure that will never happen again. I'm sure they're going to make sure they
let's
deploy their
not.
Time.
Let's hope not.
Get everybody out of there healthy and evaluate what they get on film. Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes. Paul, thanks so much for making the time. We're out of time, and my goodness gracious, it goes very, very fast. We really didn't get a chance to talk about Will Smith. Maybe next time we'll know a little bit more about what happened there, too. But we can also reflect on the kind of young man that he was when he was at Ohio State that you got to know, and we look forward to doing that. All right, Paul?
All right, sounds good, Bob. Take care.
Thank you, sir. There you go. It is 4 o'clock, and I really wanted to ask about Will Smith. There's not a whole lot, you know, more that can be said about that tragedy right now. It is being investigated. The situation may have changed a little bit from when we first found out about it a few days ago after the terrible shooting that left him dead in cold blood. But you like to, when you get the opportunity, to think about positive things. And his time at Ohio State as a member of the national championship team in 2002 certainly is a positive thing. All right, get a timeout now. Like I said, it's top of the hour. On the other side, NBA playoff fever. Catch it this weekend. The Pistons, the Cavaliers, head-to-head, Detroit and Cleveland. Probably not much of a challenge for the Cavaliers, but you know what? Both teams are in the playoffs for a reason. We're going to talk to Aaron McMahon about that from the Pistons side of things at MLive.com, get his preview of the series, and then talk a little bit more about the Mamba and his 60 last night, and, of course, Steph Curry and the Warriors getting the 73 that they so desired. All of that coming up in the next hour right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.